सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Let us read the 11th verse. Balam balavatamasmi kamaraga vivarjitam dharma viruddho bhuteshu कामोऽस्मि भरतर्षभ। कंटिन्यूइंग लॉर्ड कृष्णा इज डिस्क्राइबिंग हिज ग्लोरीज हियर, हाउ ही इज ऑल परवेसिव, हाउ ही इज एवरीवेयर, एंड टू एनेबल अस टू सी दिस फैक्ट सम ऑफ हिज इंपॉर्टेंट मैनिफेस्टेशंस आर डिस्क्राइब्ड हियर, those which we come across in our day-to-day life. Balam balavatam asmi, I am the strength of the strong. Kama raga vivarjitam, Lord Krishna says, I am the strength among the strong people, people who possess strength, I am the very strength. But then we know that strength also can be destructive. We find that sometimes the strength, instead of protecting the weak, is used for exploiting the weak. So if Lord Krishna is strength in general, would it mean that Lord Krishna also is then this negative or destructive strength? Therefore Lord Krishna qualifies kama raga vivarjitam balam. The strength is the, that is free from desire and attachment, kama and raga. Actually, these two words mean more or less the same, but in as much as both these words are used together in the same verse, therefore we have to find a slight different meaning. Therefore, kama and raga. Kama is trushna, the craving. Craving for something which you don't have. And raga is the ranjana, is the attachment for those things that we have. So kama is then the craving for what we do not have, and raga is the attachment for what we have. So both of these also bring about a kind of a strength, a passion. That desire for something or craving something also can bring about a strength, powered by which I perform actions to acquire things, to possess them and enjoy them. And attachment also brings about a strength to hold on to something, to not let go of what I love or what I am attached to. So usually this kind of strengths are negative. The strength arising from craving for something, or strength arising from attachment to something. Attachment also would include aversion. So this raga and dvesha, they also bring about a certain passion, which is also a strength. And Lord Krishna, 5th chapter said, in fact, talking about this, shaknoti hyav yasodham prak sharira vimokshanat kamak krodhod bhavam vegam. The vega, the force that arises because of the kama and krodha. So attachment and anger, the kind of force that they bring about is usually a destructive force. Meaning that my force, whenever it is expressed, when I am angry, then it's going to hurt somebody. Or my force when it is expressed when I am passionate, then also it is going to hurt somebody. So Lord Krishna says, I am strength all right, but kama raga vivarjitam, the strength that is devoid of kama and raga, devoid of attachment and craving. then what kind of strength that is? Dehadi dharana matrartham. The strength that is required for sustaining this body, or strength that is required to perform the duties or activities that we are required to do. The strength that is a positive strength, that helps us to sustain this body, that helps us to perform our duties, that helps us to perform good deeds, that kind of strength, Lord Krishna says, I am. That is sattva, rajas and tamas. So sattvic strength can be there, rajas strength can be there, tamas also can be there. So the strength is, accompanied with rajas, then it comes out generally as craving or attachment. The strength accompanied with tamas, it often comes out as anger or cruelty. So in anger or cruelty also, there is a lot of strength. In attachment or craving also, there is strength. And we know that those two strengths are usually harming or hurting others. So whatever is done out of greed, out of that kind of a passion or greed, generally hurts, because then when I am greedy, I become sort of blind to the rights and requirements of other people, and out of greed then I deprive them of what is rightfully theirs. When I'm angry, then also I become blind to the sensitivities of other people, and I hurt their sensitivities. So the strength of rajas and tamas is usually the strength that hurts. That's why Lord Krishna says, kama raga vivarjitam balam. And the strength of is sattvic strength. The strength that is required to sustain the body. The strength that is required for sustaining. And dharma also, and performing duties also, requires a strength. To do what is to be done also requires a strength. That is the sattvic strength. Yajna, dana, tapah, karma, natyajyam. Lord Krishna says that in everybody's life, there should be yajna, dana and tapaha. Yajna means worship must be there, dhanam, charity must be there, tapas, austerity also must be there. So these are what we call the daily obligated duties of worshipping, charity, austerities. And now performing austerities also requires certain strength of controlling one's own self, controlling one's own impulses. That also requires a strength. Charity, dhanam, requires that I should keep under check my impulse of greed, of not parting with what I have. So there is that also I must keep under check to be able to do dhanam or charity. Yajna, worship also requires certain strength to overcome my tamas and do what is to be done. So, performing our daily duties, the worship, all of these also require certain strength, which is the sattvic strength. That's what it sustains. So sustains my body, sustains my life, sustains the universe also. It is yajna that sustains the universe. Annat bhavanti bhutani, parjanyat anna samavaha, yajnat bhavati parjanya. Lord Krishna said in the third chapter that the living beings are sustained by food. The food, in turn, is produced because of rain. And the rains are because of yajna, because of a spirit of offering, a spirit of worship, a spirit of self-offering that people maintain. That's what brings about prosperity and the rains. So this rain or this prosperity sustains the universe, and that also requires a force. That sattvic force, Lord Krishna says, I am, which sustains the universe, which sustains the individual body, the sustaining force. So, balam balavatam asmi kamaraga vivarjitam. That's the basic strength. Because of ignorance, because of ego, because of likes and dislikes, that very strength gets distorted. The strength primarily is sattvic. So, sattva or purity is the nature of things. The rajas and tamas, they are the distortions brought about because of ignorance. Ignorance brings about a false notion about myself. And therefore, the illegitimate need or false needs are brought about. The desires, all this, and so That is what distorts the strength. What we call attachment, aversion, anger, greed, all of these are nothing but distortions. And ever the basic sattvic strength, which is Ishvara, gets distorted by a jiva. So this also came earlier, this discussion. Lord Krishna said earlier, Punyo Gandhav Prasivyam Cha. I am the sweet fragrance in the earth. Then somebody may say, how about the stink? Are you that or not? So then Shankaracharya explained that this fragrance is always sweet, basically. But it becomes distorted on account of ignorance, on account of then raga, dvesha, papa. So all these sinful activities we may perform, or violation of values may happen because of our anger and greed, that's what brings about distortions. So also the force or the strength also is primarily sattvic. And it gets distorted in a person because of this raga, dvesha, etc. So therefore we should say that all the goodness belongs to Ishvara. All distortions all belong to ignorance. Because the question is asked often, if Ishvara created this world, then how come there is so much suffering in the universe? Why should there be starvation? Why should these things be there? Naturally they should not be there. They are still there because there is something called ignorance. And ignorance brings about, as we said in the morning, a distorted perception about myself, about the world, about Ishvara. That brings about various desires. That brings about cravings. That brings about greed. That brings about anger. So this kama, krodha, lobha, the lust, anger, greed, all of these are products of ignorance. So whatever suffering we find in the universe can all be traced to kama, it can all be traced to human being, number one. Whatever suffering is there anywhere can be traced to human being, and that too of the anger and greed and lust in the human being, that's what in fact brings about any suffering anywhere. Otherwise, as they say, there is enough for the need of man, but not for the greed of man. And so if you find that some people are more and others are less, is only because of greed that this uneven distribution is there. Some people are deprived even of their basic needs. Other people don't know what to do with what they have. All these kind of the disparities are brought about because of the kama, krodha, lobha. You see that all violence can be traced to anger. All the corruption can be traced to greed. And all other injustice can be traced to the lust and whatever. So these are all distortions due to ignorance. That is how we have what we call the asuri sampat, what they call the demoniac tendencies also, which are not natural. The demonic tendencies which may have, like the anger, lust, etc., that's not of a nature. That means they can be gotten rid of. They are only incidental, or they are imposters, or they are, you know, but they are not natural to us. Our nature basically is divine nature. Ahimsa, satyam, akrodaha. So non-violence, truthfulness, that is our nature. But that nature gets distorted again because of ignorance and products of ignorance. And so, to answer the question, how come we have this, how do we explain the evil? This question has always been there in the creation of God. How do you explain evil? Evil is always the product of ignorance. So Lord Krishna therefore clarifies here, Punyo Gandhav Prasivyam Cha. The sweet fragrance I am. Even that is good I am. At least that is what is being said right now. Even the good strength, the protecting strength I am. The strength of Lord Rama, which protects others. Not the strength of Ravana, which destroys or hurts others. Therefore, Ravana also has a strength. Lord Krishna is not that, because that strength comes from kama and raga and lobha. So Ravana is in fact portrayed as a person who is highly lustful, very angry, and therefore also very greedy. So this kama, krodha, lova, all of this can be seen as heightened in Ravana. And we can see how that strength always had been a destructive strength. So Lord Krishna says, I am the strength in Rama, which is the sattvic strength. It is same strength in Ravana, but is distorted, therefore it becomes the Ravana strength. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kama asmi bharatarshava. A very favorite line for Pujya Swamiji, that I am kama. He always keeps on declaring, you know, kama, desire I am. And so Pujya Swamiji always likes to say this, wants to say this, that I am desire. See, Lord Krishna says, I am desire. For those people who think that desire is bad, so an impression is created, desire is bad. And so Pujya Swami always says that to desire is in fact a privilege that we have. Ichha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Ichha Shakti, Kriya Shakti. The power to know, the power to will, and the power to act. The threefold power that is given to human being, it is a privilege. So Lord Krishna says, kamaha. Kama here should mean desire. Kama can also mean sexual desire. That's often what is in the meaning of word kama. But here kama means desire in general. That I am the desire in human being. And that is indeed a privilege that a human being has, that he has desire. Although desire is the cause of all suffering also. But then desire also can very well be the cause of all the happiness also. It depends upon how we use this force of desire. If desire is properly understood, desire can be a blessing. If desire is not properly understood, it can be a curse also. And as much as we find that desire becomes the cause of suffering in most people, doesn't have to. The desire does not have to become a cause of suffering, but in most people it does become cause of suffering because the desire is not understood. But then, to desire is a great privilege that human being enjoys, and that is what distinguishes, among other things, desire also is what distinguishes a human being from other beings. That human being has ambition. Now he is an ambitious being, right from the birth. He always wants to be bigger and better than what he is. Not being satisfied with status quo, not being satisfied with what I am and what I have, unfortunately also. So, not being satisfied with what I have is one kind of dissatisfaction. Not being satisfied with what I am is a different kind of dissatisfaction. Basic dissatisfaction is dissatisfied with what I am. The source of desire is in self-consciousness. Human being is the only self-conscious being. Other living beings are not conscious of themselves in the manner a human being is. I mean, others also are self-conscious. I think a dog knows it is a dog. And a cat, it may not know the word dog or whatever, but it knows what it is. And a cat knows that it is cat. So when it sees other cat, see the behavior of a cat to other cat is different from towards the dog. And the dog's behavior towards the dog is different from other animals. So they know. That kind of self-consciousness is there. Otherwise you cannot survive, I guess, you know. But the human being has much more self-consciousness than that because the intellect in human being is most manifest. The intelligence is most manifest in human being. Therefore, he's a self-conscious being, too much conscious of himself. And conscious of the fact that he is inadequate, constantly aware of his inadequacy. So human being a self-conscious being, is always conscious of his inadequacy. He finds himself inadequate. Because he has some kind of an idea about what adequacy means, I guess, you know. Doesn't know what adequacy means, actually. See, whenever I judge myself as inadequate, I don't think that the person knows what it is that he wants. But usually, I keep comparing myself with others. And then, I am conscious that I have this much amount of wealth, I see somebody else who has greater amount of wealth, I feel that I am inadequate. I am conscious about my education, I have a certain amount of education, then I have become conscious of somebody else who is more educated than me, I feel inadequate. Most of the time, our inadequacy comes because of comparison. But we always compare. I don't think cows compare themselves, otherwise they would be miserable. But then, human being, as Pujya Swamiji would say, a cow with shapely horn does not feel that it is any better than a cow with broken horns. Although owner of the cow may be more proud of his cow than the other fellow, that is possible. Human beings have complexes. In the dog show, when a dog wins the show, he is taken around, that fellow doesn't know what is going on there. His owner of the dog was very proud. He did not win anything, you know, but still. So this complex, this judgment about oneself, complex about oneself, coming from comparing with other people, and never feeling a sense of inadequacy, but this self-consciousness because of which the human being feels himself inadequate. Actually, there is a certain standard that a human being has, really. You know, what is his standard? What does he want him to be? How do I want to see myself? I want to see myself as perfect. I want to see myself as perfect, as limitless, as free, as lacking nothing. This is what I want. And all I see is generally lack and inadequacies in myself. Therefore, dissatisfaction is one's own self. That is the cause of desire. The cause of desire is dissatisfaction with myself. And then what form that desire will take depends upon my perception of what will bring me the adequacy. That's all. That I am inadequate is the cause of my dissatisfaction with myself. And that is common to every human being. And so we find that the desires in different human beings are different. That is because the perception that a human being has about what will bring that satisfaction, what will bring the adequacy, what will make me adequate, everybody has his or her perception about that. And that is why the form of desire is different. The form of desire is different. But the desire definitely can be traced to the sense of inadequacy, which as we know is because of ignorance. Because by nature I am adequate and I take myself to be inadequate, and Lord Krishna will describe subsequently. In the 5th chapter it was said, Ajnanena vritam jnanam tena mukhyanti jantavah. The jnanam, my knowledge about myself, is veiled because of ignorance. And it causes wrong perception about myself. And that is why I am always deluded, meaning that I always take myself away different from what I am. And that's what causes a sense of inadequacy. That brings about a desire to be adequate. So desire is common to every human being, to be adequate, to be free, to be complete. However, what will bring me that completeness? What will bring me the freedom and adequacy, that perception being different with different human beings? Therefore, the actual desires are different in different people. But then, Lord Krishna says that desire I am. Well, he is everything, therefore, desire also. But then the reason why the desire is mentioned in particular is because, as I said, the desire can be a great blessing. That ambition can be a great blessing if it is understood and channelized properly. Therefore, Lord Krishna clarifies, dharma viruddha, dharma aviruddha. The desire which is unopposed to dharma. The desire unopposed to dharma. The desire in keeping with dharma. It can be two ways actually. What is meant by desire in keeping with dharma? Because dharma shastra also gives sanction to certain kind of desires. A brahmachari can have this desires, is all right. A grihastha can have this desires. A vanaprastha such and such desires. A sannyasi such and such desire. Everybody has different dharma. So what is dharma of a grihastha is different from dharma of a sannyasi. So grihastha can have desire for wealth and for sense gratification, for ego gratification, is quite okay. As long as that desire for sense gratification, or desire even for ego gratification, as long as that desire is fulfilled in keeping with dharma or righteousness, so long it's okay. Hopefully you should grow out of that also. Hopefully a person should grow out of that also. But anyway, one begins with desire for gratification. That's called kama. Desire for gratification. Desire for sense gratification. Desire for ego gratification. Desire for emotional gratification. Desire for intellectual gratification. So this desire for gratification at different levels is there. But desire is desire for gratification. Desire for an experience that will bring me happiness. Experience at the level of senses. Experience at the level of emotions. Experience the level of intellect. Experience at the level of ego. That experience will bring me happiness, gratification. Basically, therefore, human being desires gratification, happiness, or adequacy. That's what he desires. If this is understood, then of course life will gain a proper direction. Then we'll know what the real desire behind all the desires is and so forth and so on. But anyway, here important thing is that Lord Krishna says that desire also is my glory. And so as long as the desire is expressed in keeping with dharma. Although the definition of dharma will change, understand. For a brahmachari, dharma is of one kind. For grihastha, dharma is different kind. Vanaprastha, dharma is different. For a sannyasi, dharma is different. So in whatever station of life one is, and whatever dharma or the righteous mode of life is, a desire should be expressed in keeping with righteousness. Then the person will learn and will grow out of desire. It is necessary, even though Lord Krishna says desire is my glory or my vibhuti, and still we should know that we have to ultimately grow out of desire. And that the desires should get then converted into the desire for moksha, which in turn should get converted into desire for knowledge, which will get satisfied when the knowledge is gained, or moksha is gained. And so, that ultimately the desire behind all desires is for moksha. If they understood, then life will become a process of attainment of moksha. Dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi bhadarshabharam. So some of these vibhutis or glories are presented here by Lord Krishna in some of these verses for the purpose of meditation, for the purpose of worship. So knowing Ishvara, then the way of translating the knowledge in our life is worship. Because Ishvara is the object of worship. And so the way to worship is looking up all of these that Lord Krishna described as the buddhi, the intelligence, as the brilliance, as the strength, as the desire, as the various things, as nothing but the divine manifestations, those which are to be worshipped, and that is where the expression of Ishvara is, and for us to tune up with Ishvara. So knowing Ishvara, the step before knowledge is tuning up with Ishvara. So karma yoga also is that, and there's bhakti, or worshipping mentally here. So this is also worship. The karma yoga also is worship, but through the action. Here is worship at the level of mind, what we call upasana. So that also is worship at the level of the what we call mind or meditation. So that was These verses were told by Lord Krishna to explain how mai saramidam prutam sutre mani ganaiva, how everything is strung in me like the beads are strung in a thread. So how the whole universe is strung in me, how I pervade everything, how I am the self of all. But somebody can ask Lord Krishna, Lord, you say that you are the sweet fragrance. How about the stinking odor? Are you that or not? You say that you are only the strength unopposed to the unaccompanied by kamaraga. You are desire unopposed to dharma. So all the good things you are. So how about the other things? On one hand you proclaim that there is nothing other than me. On the other hand, you say that these few things I am, all good things you are. So Lord Krishna says, no, in fact I am everything. But these few things are mentioned here, as you said, for the purpose of worship. We begin worship that way. For example, typically, we perform worship of Ishvara, at least, you know, in the Hindu culture, it is done through a form. Through a name and form, you worship Ishvara. But Swamiji, you say Ishvara is everywhere, he is all pervasive, he is, you know, infinite, and how do you worship him in a small little name and form? It is that to see Ishvara in one place, at least to begin with. It's an ideal to see Ishvara everywhere. But we begin by seeing Ishvara in one place, in one name and form. And slowly to expand our vision, to see him in all the names and forms. That's the purpose. So also Lord Krishna described his glories, that we can see him in all those sattvic expressions. But ultimately, to be able to see Ishvara in everything. And therefore in the 12th verse, Lord Krishna says,
Ye chaiva sattvika bhavaha rajasastamasaschaye matta eveti tan vidhi natvaham teshu te mai.
Ye chaiva, hey Arjuna, do not think that what I say in the last few verses is all that I am. Ye chaiva sattvikaha bhavaha, rajasaha bhavaha, tamasaha bhavaha. Whatever sattvika is, so sattvad nirvrutam. Whatever is born of sattva is called sattvika. What is born of rajas is called rajasa. What is born of tamas is called tamasa. We need not call it rajasika, you know. You can call it, but then rajasa is enough. Rajasa and tamasa. Usually we call it rajasika, tamasika, to rhyme with sattvika. With sattva, of course, already sattvika. But from rajas, rajasa and tamasa. If you add one more pratyaya and call it rajasika and tamasika, grammatically will be all right. But it's not necessary to add two pratyayas. So Lord Krishna says, sattvika, rajasaha, tamasaha. So that's all. This universe is also a product of these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. So whatever it is that is product of sattva, whatever it is that is product of rajas and tamas, meaning whatever there is in the universe. Sattva is, sattvika is what is good, what is pleasing, what is favorable, what is kind. So what is kind, favorable, pleasing, helpful, is all sattvika. What is restless, aggressive, greedy, is all rajasa. What is dull, cruel, angry, cruel, is tamasa. So, among these three, sattvika, rajasa and tamasa will include the entire universe. So you know that certain things are very pleasing to us. Certain things are displeasing to us. Certain things are inimical to us also. Sattvika, Rajasa, Tamasa, whatever it is. Rama, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Vibhishana. These three brothers are there. Ravana, Kumbhakarna and Vibhishana. Vibhishana represents the Sattva. Ravana represents the Rajas. Kumbhakarna represents the Tamas. You are sleeping 6 months at a time. Tamas. Ravana is very aggressive, lustful, Rajas. And Vibhishana is the Lord, or is a devotee of Rama. He is a sattvic person. Very unusual. In fact, when Vibhishana comes to Lord Rama, then Lord Rama asks him, say, how do you, remaining in this Shatamandali, so, remain in the midst of this, all these demons, how do you follow your dharma? Vibhishana says, Lord, you're right. I'm like a tongue that is in between these teeth, you know, and so, tongue has to be very careful. Otherwise, it can be crushed at any time. Only by grace of your grace, O Lord, that I'm able to worship you. Otherwise, it's impossible. Because, in fact, the deha of Rakshasa, the upadhi is such that he's always full of tamas. Vibhishana is a great exception. That is the, but these three brothers, sattva, rajas and tamas. Lord Krishna says that, ye chaiva sattvikaha bhavaha, rajasaha tamasasya mattaheva. From me alone they are all born, meaning that all of these are my expressions only. There is an evakara, mattaheva. There is nobody other than me. They are all born of me, of no one else. Because I am the only source. I am the maker as well as material. I am their source and I am the very manifestation. And so in this universe, whatever things are that are beautiful, that are pleasing, that are comforting, what are things that may be difficult, that may be aggressive, that may be causing pain, whatever that may be, that is very cruel and that is inimical and destructive. Lord Krishna says, all of these are my expressions. Mattahe vijitan vidhi. Therefore, I am the self of all. I am equally present in Rama, Vibhishana, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and all of them. I am equally present because I am the self of all. Does it mean then that Lord, as Ravana, you are killing these people? As Rakshasa, you are doing these things? And Lord, this Ravana is born and Ravana dies. Does it mean that being his self, you are also born, you are also dying? You are also performing these sinful acts? You also undergo change constantly? So Lord Krishna says, Natvaham teshu te mai. Explaining this, aham teshu na, I am not in them. Te mai, they are in me. So this is Vedanta. I am not in them, they are in me. So here, Lord Krishna clarifies, what kind of a creator or what kind of a cause I am? I am the cause of universe, all right. I am the maker as well as material, all right. But then, it is the nature of material to undergo change or transformation to become a product. If clay is a material cause of a pot, then the clay must undergo a change to become a pot. Because clay becomes a pot, the material cause becomes the effect, there is becoming involved, there is change involved there, transformation involved. A clay cannot remain just in the form of a lump and then still be a pot, that the form must change. Even though there may not be change in the clayness, but still the form of the clay must change, then alone a pot can be created. And therefore, that kind of change or transformation has to be there. So in Vedanta they would call this, what we call parinami upadana karanam, a material cause that undergoes change. So when Lord Krishna says, I am the material cause of the universe, generally you would think that Lord has become all of this. He has become this universe. He has become this world of names and forms. He has become this sattva, sattvika, rajasa, tamasa. All these beings he has become. Then alone he can be called a material cause in the primary sense. But to explain that, I am the material cause, all right, but not like the clay is for the pot, or gold is for the ornament. I am not the material cause that undergoes change. I am not the parinami upadana karanam. Then what? Because clay cannot say that I am not in them and they are in me. In fact, clay is in pot and pot is in clay. But here Lord Krishna says that they are in me, I am not in them. Meaning that they are dependent upon me, I am not dependent upon them. This world of names and forms is dependent upon me, is a dependent reality. I am not dependent upon them, I am independent reality. They are dependent, I am independent. The dependent reality is called what, you know? That which depends upon something else for it to be is called mithya. The Vedanta uses the word mithya. What is mithya? Mithya is that which depends upon something else for it to be there. You say that the pot is mithya because it depends upon clay for it to be there. In the example of clay and pot, the clay is independent, the pot is dependent. So dependent is called mithya, independent is called satya. So Lord Krishna says that the world is mithya and I am satyam. Brahma satyam, jagan mithya. That means that I am not the conventional material cause that undergoes change. I am a material cause that does not undergo any change. So what is the standard example of Vedanta, of that kind of a creation? One example is of the clay and the pot. Pot is created from clay. The other kind of creation is the gold and ornament is the same thing. Rope snake. Najju sarpa. The snake also is creation. And rope is the cause of that creation also. Because the snake could not be the rope snake now, not the standard snake, but the rope snake. Where the rope is perceived as a snake. What is there is rope, but then it is perceived as a snake. This is called Brahma or superimposition or delusion. Where Vedanta says that a snake is created. So in fact, Vedanta does not say that the snake is not there. The rope snake, Vedanta would not say the snake is non-existent. Nor will it say that snake is real. But snake does enjoy some kind of existence. That's called mithya. And so, the rope is the material cause of a snake. What is the material cause? That from which the effect emerges, that by which the effect is sustained, that under which the effect goes back. Like the clay is for the pot. The pot emerges from the clay. The pot is sustained by clay. The pot goes back into clay. So we call clay the material cause of the pot. And so also we can say that the rope is the material cause of the snake. Because the snake emerges from rope, snake is sustained by the rope, and when you throw the torchlight and recognize that this is a rope, the snake merges back into rope, and by that definition, rope can be called the material cause of the snake. What kind of material cause? The vivarta upadana karana, where the rope does not undergo any change. Then the rope can say that the snake is in me, I am not in the snake. Meaning, the snake is superimposed upon me. I am not superimposing upon the snake. Snake is the dependent reality. I am the independent reality. snake is mithya, I am satyam. This is being said in this verse, natvaham teshu te mai. Meaning that all these changes do take place. But the changes taking place in creation in no way affect the material cause in this particular case. We cannot say quite that about this pot, because if you put a scratch on the pot, it is scratch on the clay. If you heat this pot, the clay gets heated. Cool the pot, the clay gets cooled. If Ishvara was like that, then if I suffer the pain, he also suffers pain because of the material cause. If I am happy, then he is also happy because of the material cause. If I am born, then he is also born. If I die, then he also dies. If I suffer, he also suffers. He is a big samsari. Having just one body gives me all this samsara, then he is the cause of all this living being, of the whole universe. Then he can be blamed for everything. Then we can ask him, why did you cause this earthquake? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? He says, who did it? Now here, Lord Krishna says, what are you talking about? Because this is all mithya. It is merely an appearance and not a reality. Just as a snake is an appearance, not a reality, so also the universe is an appearance, not a reality. Swamiji, this is all good in talking, but it's not good in talking. This is now proven also, is it not? The scientists have already proven that what we call matter is nothing but the expression of energy. It's one only appearing as many. And the basic substance which they call energy does not undergo changes, and there is conservation is there always. And the scientists call it energy, we will only call it consciousness. Energy does get transformed into matter back and forth, but consciousness doesn't get transformed also, it only appears as matter. So matter is nothing but the appearance of consciousness. Consciousness appearing as matter. If you like, waves of consciousness, or whatever it is, I am, whatever you want to call it, but it's nothing but one consciousness alone appearing as all this multitude of names and forms. And so it does not matter what form it is, because the basic substance is not affected at all. In short, when we say that Ishvara is the vivarta upadana karanam, like the rope is for the snake, then it does not matter what the creation is, because somebody may look upon the rope as a snake, somebody else may think it is a garland, somebody else may think that it is a stick, somebody thinks that it is a streak of water, somebody thinks it is a crack in the earth, all kinds of perceptions can be there, all of the different creations are there. So one rope can appear as all these many various objects, having different names, forms and uses, and the rope in fact does not lose its ropeness at all. And thus also the snake of the poison does not make the rope poisonous, or the fragrance of the garland does not make the rope fragrant also. The guna or the dosha, the virtue and vice of that creation does not affect the cause at all. And so also the sattva, rajas, tamas, whatever there is in the creation does not affect Ishvara at all, who is the vivarta, upadana karanam, is the material cause all right, that does not undergo a change. This is extremely important. Not to brand, this is not for branding the world as mithya that is being said. See, one accusation or charge that is done against Vedantin, that you fellows talk about, you say world is mithya. First of all, they interpret word mithya as they want. Mithya doesn't mean, in our regional languages or colloquial language, generally word mithya is used to describe something that is wrong or something that is false, something that is bad maybe. Because mithya means there is also koot, kapata is there, some cheating is there. There is no such thing involved. Mithya means, as Pujya Swamiji says, it is a word simply denoting reality. Satyam is a word denoting a reality, that which is not subject to being negated. Mithya is another word denoting reality, which is subject to negation, that's all. That doesn't mean it's good, bad or indifferent, it's just subject to negation. And that's what the universe is. It is an appearance, which is nice, because then it does not appear, it does not matter what the appearance is. It's knowing the mithya as mithya makes us indifferent to that. Not unemotional, indifferent meaning that, then it doesn't matter whether something is this or something is that. When you're making a palace of the scars, whether it's a 7-story palace or 6-story palace or 9-story palace or 35 rooms are there or 40 rooms, what does it matter? When you make a house out of sand, well, my house is bigger than you. It's all sand anyway. When you're playing that game, which is called, what is it called? Vyapara. So, monopoly. All right. He won $1 million and this fellow lost fine. It's all a piece of paper anyway. It is very important to the fellows who think it is real, yes, and then they fight amongst each other. Therefore, all of this can be compared to then a game. Swamiji looks like a very painful game. Looks a very cruel game. See, game is a game, we can make it painful if you want. I mean, game of cricket is cricket, is it not? But these fellows, Indians, you know, the poor fellows, they had to actually sneak into the country. They could not have openly come. Otherwise, I don't know what kind of treatment they would have gotten, you know, from the hands of their fans. They would sneak because it became very painful for the whole country. Painful for them also because they lost crores of rupees of all kinds of contracts and things like that, you know. Many people lost a lot of things. But that is our creation. Is it not so? Does a game have to become painful? If you attach a lot of things to the outcome, if the outcome becomes more important than the game, then the game, it's not the game that is painful, outcome is painful because we insist upon a certain outcome. I don't think the sport or the game was designed, you know, if two teams win, I mean, play, one of them has to lose, and I mean, that is known. So understand that all the pain is a created pain. If the game is looked upon as game, if a play is looked upon as play, then it's okay. In the play also, if you take sides, I'm the Rama, I'm on this side, I'm at this side, you know, then of course you fight with each other, but it's a play, is a play. If it is so understood that this is an appearance, that does not mean that we are in any way denigrating the world or disparaging it or anything. It is just describing what it is. Ishvara appearing as universe. The purpose of calling or recognizing Jagat as Mithya is so that we can recognize Satyam. Understand that Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, the reason why we should understand Jagat as Mithya is so that we can understand Ishvara as Satyam. Then alone the non-duality can be understood otherwise. If this is real, if the maniness were real, then there is no way that the truth can be non-dual. The truth can be non-dual only when duality is mithya, is an appearance. In that case, it's all mithya. What does it matter if it is mine or yours? What does it matter? Whether it is big or small, if nothing matters, then what? Can there be any pain in life? Imagine, if everybody knew this truth, then it's all mithya. Meaning that it cannot give me any happiness, it cannot give me security, it cannot give me comfort, it can give me comfort, but not the mental comfort, it can give me comfort at the physical level. Other than that, it's no use. Suppose all of us recognize this. Then would it matter to me whether I have $1 million or $10 million or $1 billion? Would it matter? Then I would not appropriate $1 billion and deprive many of people, you know, of their basic necessities because I have appropriated billions of dollars for me and thus depriving many others of the basic needs also. Then that would not happen. If everybody knew that the world is mithya, Atma is Satyam, that is where happiness is, that's where freedom is, that's where wholeness and completeness is, and nowhere else. And then these things will become inconsequential, except that they are required to serve the basic necessities of life, which everybody has a right, you know, to fulfill the basic necessities. But if that was our relationship with the world, then I think everybody will get their basic necessity. If we confine our relation to the world only to the basic necessity, then I'm sure that everybody will get their basic necessity. There is enough to provide the basic necessity of all the living beings, not only of human beings, all living beings. But because what is mithya is given reality, therefore everything becomes painful. The pain comes only because of calling real what is mithya. What is game has become a game of life. World Cup jeetenge, that's all. So you go to World Cup to win. That means that if you lose, then you are depressed. I don't think anybody watches a game of cricket. When you watch India playing with other people, we don't watch cricket. We watch what is the score. What our people scored, what those fellows scored. Therefore, we may fail to appreciate the beautiful strokes of the opponent. It's not the game that you appreciate. It's just a win and loss. So giving reality to what is mithya is a cause of pain. Then given wrong priorities, wrong values in our life. And therefore, the satyam gets ignored. When mithya gets so much importance, poor satyam or Ishvara does not have much room left. Only after satisfying all the demands of mithya. Mithya is a very demanding thing also. That Swami, there is no time. There will be no time. No time for prayers. No time for study. No time for classes. No time for meditation. Because other things take so much time. Mithya takes all the time and energy. And Satyam, Ishvara, has hardly any scope in our life. Even for Swamis also, same thing. So much activity and so much work, because Ishvara gets some chance now and then. Natvam teshu te mai. I am not in them, they are in me. They are because of me. They are nothing but my manifestation. And they are nothing but my appearance. So it does not matter what they are. In that case, there is no hatred for tamas and no attraction for something, because they are all ultimately Ishvara. Otherwise we just get, you know, so excited, we get so wild when we find something that is, Swami, why should this happen? Why should he do that? Why should something happen, something not happen? Theek hai, that is also mithya, wo bhi theek hai. That not that everything is fine, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, at least you don't have that kind of strong emotions about things. Do what is necessary to do. But there will be no hatred. If somebody is doing something that is damaging the society, all right, you do what is necessary to do, but don't hate that person. Actions are taken not out of hatred, not as punishment, it's out of dharma. Dharma can be there when raga-dveshas are not there. Raga-dveshas are bound to be there when mithya is given reality. So Lord Krishna clarifies, I am the cause. I am one and non-dual, because duality is also myself, nothing but my appearance. Without becoming each jagat, I appear as jagat. I remain what I am, one, non-dual, ever limitless, ever complete, and appear as this universe of multiplicity, universe of divisions also. This is also my appearance. Therefore, the universe does not cause what we call a duality, because mithya does not count as separate from satyam.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Shankaram Shankaracharyam केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ